Ugh. Anyway, she had
were you
to,
friends with her?
No, I mean,
was she young?
She was younger than me for sure.
Oh,
but,
damn, poor little girl.
Yeah, I just can't imagine having to go through. It's like Christmas, but with shit. You're like opening boxes and there's shit after shit after shit. Yeah. And it's a lot of people's shit.
Hey, Mike.
What's up?
Yo.
So we have our friend Mike here as a guest today. He's going to be talking about a bunch of cool stuff. Fun fact, he's getting a tattoo today.
Yes, I am.
Can you tell us what you're getting?
Yeah, it's a cursor, like the ones you see on your computers.
Yeah, like a mouse cursor. Clicking. Yeah, yeah.
Yep. And I'm going to get that on my pointer finger.
Nice.
On my right hand.
On your right hand.
Right hand.
That's kind of interesting. I've literally never seen anybody with that.
Yeah, so you were thinking about this for quite a while, right?
Well, okay, so actually, I've been meaning to get a tattoo for some time.
Uh-huh.
And it seems to be that people who have tattoos have these great, meaningful stories or experiences behind them. But
yeah.
I could never decide, so I never got one. And then one day, I just thought, you know what?
It clicked. I'm sorry.
No, that I mean, so maybe.
That was a bad joke.
Oh, that's actually pretty funny.
Let's restart this episode. Just
that's
kidding.
No,
funny.
That was
episode,
good. Episode's
that
over.
That was good. Let's
that's
go home.
It right there.
Let's go home.
Just, you can just say that now. It's like, it just clicked.
It just clicked.
I think that was a good joke.
Thank you.
But anyway, it's just that I think a tattoo could be seen as sort of where you are right now, what you're thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be fun to see how I feel about and think about the tattoo in a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
It's just to see how I've progressed as a human. But for now, it's that our hand is a marvel of evolution.
Mm-hmm.
It's the culmination of, I don't know, millions and billions of years of science and
right.
magical probabilities
magical, yeah.
happening.
Yeah.
But all we seem to do nowadays is to click on a computer.
Mm. Clicking, scrolling. Okay, yeah, that's really cool. Did anything did you see something similar and got inspired off of that?
I'm not going to lie. A good friend of mine has it.
Ooh.
And I saw that and I said, you know what? That's probably the cleverest tattoo I've seen in a while.
That is smart.
Mm-hmm.
Like back when I was, I think, in middle school, I saw somebody with a index finger tattoo that says, shh. And then when you literally put your finger to your lips, right. it's like, and I was like, oh my God, that's genius.
Yeah.
But you know what? I don't think that anymore. But the clicking thing, that's new. That's like a fresh idea. I've never seen that.
I've never seen it until that guy.
Mm-hmm.
His name is James.
So
shout out to James.
Yeah.
James.
Straight up after this recording session, you're going to go get your tattoo.
Yeah, right away.
Wow. That's
so
exciting.
I'm very excited.
Does it hurt to get a tattoo on the finger?
I think so, yeah, because it's like bony.
A few of my friends who are more into the tattoo world than I am
uh-huh.
warned me gravely that getting a tattoo on your hand is a big no-no.
Oh.
Because?
Very visible?
They couldn't tell me. They were just like, it's a rule in the tattoo community.
Huh.
So I asked why, what's wrong with it?
Mm-hmm.
And no one could tell me. It
really?
Was just one of these traditions.
Just like unspoken rules?
Right, right.
It's like Fight
Illuminati,
Club. They can't
the
actually tell you why
right,
you can't
right.
do it.
So I kept asking, what is it about the hand that's so inherently taboo? They couldn't tell me.
That is fascinating. I didn't know that.
Yeah,
because a lot of the tattoo people have
finger tats.
Yeah,
right.
Hand tattoos.
But apparently there's sort of a hierarchy in which you have to approach.
Oh, no, that is true. Most people that I saw, like I've seen with finger or hand mm-hmm. tattoos, they usually have a lot of tattoos
right.
elsewhere.
They already have tattoos.
So it's like you unlock a new level.
I guess.
It's like the order.
Yeah.
The high order.
But clearly I'm late to the tattoo game, so I want to get, I want to get straight
to the
point. So
you're like skipping the line.
Yeah,
like,
I guess. And I guess they're not so happy about that.
That's funny.
Well, they can deal with it.
Yeah, I mean,
why don't you give them another finger?
Full of puns today.
It's like, why don't you check out this?
So I guess what is our topic today, really?
Well, I guess we can maybe ask Mikey or Mike.
I'm okay with both.
A little bit about his background and what brought him here and what kind of work he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so This is going to be quite a lengthy introduction.
That's cool.
But I think
we have all day.
I think you guys could handle it.
Yeah.
So I was born in Korea.
Mm-hmm.
And after attending first grade for 2 weeks, I left for Singapore. So I'm 7 at this point.
Okay.
I don't know Korean and I don't know English.
Okay.
I'm at that tender age of not knowing anything.
Oh.
It's okay. I still don't know anything.
And I moved to Singapore at 7, went to elementary school, and what do you call, what comes after elementary school?
Middle school.
Yes. Clearly he doesn't know anything, so I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Yeah, so I did elementary and middle school in Singapore.
Uh-huh.
And then I moved to Hong Kong when I was 14.
Damn, a lot of moving.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like those Singapore and Hong Kong, you can say they're similar enough where it wasn't like a culture shocker.
Yeah, yeah. So that was my second time abroad.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the culture shock had kind of left me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it was both, I don't want to say Chinese influence, but it
kind of is.
Yeah, that both countries had a lot of Chinese ideas or themes that you could identify there. And Hong Kong was just a really good time for me. And after graduating from high school there, I went to Boston for college, did the whole American college experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Returned to Korea just for a year in 2013. Then went to
London. What was that for? Like, just
I was done with college and it was like, what should I do with my time?
Was it because like you didn't so much have a home base to go to because you've been living?
Yeah, yeah. So my folks had moved back to Korea while I was in college.
Okay.
And I had like no real plans, no said anything. I couldn't get a job in the States because that was probably when the Western government started to turn a bit more conservative.
Mm-hmm.
With visas and stuff?
Right,
oh,
right.
Yeah,
you know, it shows. Like,
and to clarify, this entire time while you're moving around, you had a Korean passport.
Right.
And so, you still do.
Right. Mm-hmm. So came back to Korea in 2013. And then the idea of the draft, the thing that all...
Military draft.
Right. The thing that all Korean
The long dick of the Korean military.
Yep. Yeah.
That you, I mean, I'm sorry, you get fucked.
Yeah.
You can't escape it.
Yeah.
It's pretty hard. I tried. I really tried. So one of the main reasons why I went abroad again after I returned from college was to sort of...
Run away from it?
Yeah. Abscond.
Abscond.
But, I went to London for my master's for 2 years to sort of delay that process. Mm-hmm. And when you are abroad for so long, or maybe just when you turn 25, the government sort of checks in on you to say,
Big brother
how
checks
you doing?
In.
Really? Wait, how do they check?
Hey, how
like,
you
do
doing?
Do they email you?
No. They basically shorten the duration of your passport so that you have to visit the embassy on a 6-month basis.
That is interesting.
That's smart. Yeah. This is the first time I'm hearing about this.
Yeah, yeah. So they have their ways.
Oh.
And so I left to go to London, 2015. So I was 25. Aha, I was that tender age.
Exactly.
Yes. So, right. I remember the embassy... And they were giving me a hard time with the passport thing. Uh-huh. I think when I went to London, they gave me an expiration of when my program was to end.
Oh, so they wanted you to like come back right after.
Right, right. So long story short, I finished my program and I did not want to return.
Uh-huh. Clearly.
Yeah. What awaited me was the long dick.
Yeah. The Korean
the rock army.
Yes.
The rock dick.
Rock indeed.
Rock stands for Republic of Korea. Just clear.
Yeah. I got that.
Yeah. So
Hashirama just gave me the biggest eye roll.
No, I mean, you know what a rock dick
is. Like
just
literally went to the moon and back and then landed in the studio.
It's that unpleasant. I'm with you.
Yeah.
One of the things I really wanted to do was not go to this thing. So I started hitting the web.
Yeah.
You can find anything online these days.
Definitely.
You're looking at the dark web, like how to avoid.
I didn't even need to go that far.
Yeah.
But so London's only an hour from Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And in Paris, there was this fellow by the name of Yeda Lee.
damn, he sounds like a Jedi.
Yeah. But he was Korean.
Master Yeda Lee.
Yeah. So he was a conscientious objector of the military. And he had actually sought asylum in Paris.
What?
Because this is where it gets really interesting. Is in the, or the way the Korean draft works is, if you fail to uphold your patriotism, as they say,
you can never return, is it?
Well, you, well, yeah, you can return, but it's a crime.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So for conscientious objecting against the military, they will put you in prison. Yeah. That's the actual law after the 1954 Korean War ended. That was the conscription draft law. Now, for the past decade, it hasn't been as strict, but conscientious objectors still go to prison. And it was only recently that they introduced a law that would provide alternatives to going to prison.
Wait, like, but I thought it was like after you're 40, though, you could come back?
Yeah, so, actually, that's a recent development as well.
Really?
Might be. I'm not too sure about that. But the reason why Yeda could seek asylum in Paris was because usually if you're offering an alternative to the draft, you don't go to jail. You just do whatever they tell you to do, which isn't the military. Mm-hmm. But Korea would send you to jail.
Uh-huh.
And Amnesty views that as a human rights violation.
Mm-hmm.
So that is some sort of legal precedence to seek asylum in the more sort of liberal democratic
Western
societies. Mm-hmm.
But
such
I mean,
as,
in the end, though, you're still doing time, like whether it's in the military. And I know that the alternative services, time-wise, is longer.
Right, it's longer.
Yeah, it's like 3 years.
How much longer?
I think it's 3 years.
Yeah, it's like three years. Right, yeah. So like if you're not going to the military,
Right, so you can either go to the barracks for 18 to 22 months.
Right.
Or you could go work at a prison or a factory or whatever, somewhere not that nice, for 3 years. But that's with the new laws in place.
Right.
Before, they just put you in jail.
Yo, I did not know that.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, I wasn't a conscientious objector because of a religious or, religious reason.
You just didn't want to waste your time.
Well, that too. And like, I ideologically don't think war is a great idea. It's not a... You know, I don't want
to.
Let's not go to war. Yeah. You know, it's not a fun thing people should be doing. But that doesn't really fly with the Korean government.
No,
they don't really care what you think.
No, they don't.
Yeah. So
Master Yeti.
Yeah.
What was it?
Yeda.
I know it would have been Yoda. Would have been cool too.
I know. I kind of am like envisioning like a rogue.
It's a sweet name.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Yeda.
Well, like his Korean name Yeda.
Yeah, I think his Korean name was Yi Yeda.
That's dope.
So I actually went to Paris to meet him.
Uh-huh.
It was weird because I read an article about him and then I figured out that he was in Paris.
Uh-huh.
So I was like, well, he's probably on Facebook.
Senpai. Like,
yeah. So I found him on Facebook, hit him up, and we decided to meet. And when I had met him, this must have been 2016, something like that. We met, we had a conversation, and this was when he was going through the asylum process.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not rosy.
Yeah.
Oh.
Basically, once you submit your application to be viewed as a conscientious objector, and they grant you sort of like the green card version of an asylum, they give you a little card that says, I'm seeking for asylum for this reason. And indefinite amount of time later, I will become a applicant for a French citizen.
Yeah.
But that process could take anywhere from like 6 months to forever.
Yeah.
What?
So it was like one hell or another.
Mm-hmm.
And, when I had called my parents to be like, hey, I'm in Paris. I'm thinking about objecting and not going.
Mm-hmm.
They were not pleased.
Yeah.
Did they like freak out or were they like, no, Michael?
Probably both.
Wow.
Because there's that social stigma of your son being an objector.
Yeah, because in Korea, like if you're meant to go and you don't, they kind of...
Yeah, it's definitely a stigma, and it depends how one spins this idea, but someone can view this as a unpatriotic move.
No, but even like Korean people who like lived abroad and have different citizenship, like you're not legally obligated to go, right? But I have friends who went anyway, and do you know why? Because Korean guys don't really see you as an equal, like, oh, you didn't, like, you're not really an equal man almost, right? They do that. So the ones that are like, oh, I might live, like they're not even sure if they're going to settle down in Korea, but they're like, oh, I might live in Korea and I don't want to be disrespected by the other Korean males.
Right.
So like, I think two of my guy friends who have American citizenships did the military service anyway for that reason. And that really baffled me. But
I mean, I think there's multiple reasons why people who don't have a Korean citizenship would consider doing the military. But I mean, that's a good point. There's this social stigma of if you skip, you're sort of like a bad Korean.
Yeah.
I mean, fair enough. I can see how that could play into the social dynamics. But more importantly, if you're trying to get a job here, they one of the first things they ask you is, have you gone to the military? And if you haven't, they kind of give you that look of disapproval, like, oh.
Interesting.
Right. So for a variety of reasons. Oh, one more thing would be if you're an American citizen and you're also a kyopo, you can get dual citizenship through doing the military here. So there are several reasons, but
So I have a question, Mike. So for the listeners out there, Mike did serve and you did, now you're finished.
Right.
So I'm sure having had experienced the military service, you must, your thoughts must have changed a little bit, like maybe not a lot, but what are your thoughts now compared to when you were in Paris and debating, objecting?
So I don't usually say this because I'm often wrong about things, but with the military, I was right. It was a giant waste of time.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It was a giant waste
I think
of time.
Everyone thinks it's a giant waste of time. I don't think anyone comes out being like, oh, that was enlightening.
Yeah.
But I guess my question a little bit more specifically is, what do you think about the draft existing? Like, obviously, when you're in there, like, you're wasting your time, but the draft system as a necessity.
Well, you know, that's a tough question because it really goes into sort of like the geopolitics of South Korea or what, you know, Republic of Korea is as a nation state, right? We have North Korea above us, who's kind of like that crazy uncle who also has nuclear weapons capabilities.
And crazy soldiers, let me tell you.
Right.
Those soldiers are crazy, man.
They, I mean,
they will fuck you up.
Yeah. I am definitely afraid.
Like, I see, like these South Korean guys at the, like, PC-bang, like, fucking gaming and playing Sudden Attack, and then you see, like, these North Korean soldiers that, like, eat, like, a bowl of rice a day and then serve in the military for 10 years.
Right.
If you're going hand-to-hand combat against these kids, like...
Oh, they're... Yeah.
Yeah, for like, them, it's not esports.
Survival. Yeah.
No, wait, so when you, at your time in North Korea, Shin, I know you taught university students. Were these, like, soldier-type guys also your students? Or
so actually it's a very very unique system in North Korea where if you go to college, if you're a university student, you don't serve in the military.
But I thought
it's
you
a
start
golden
early
ticket.
Or
no, so definitely going to college is a golden ticket because you don't have to serve in the military for 10 years. But since you don't have to go to the military, you go to, the way you study in the colleges is like military system.
Oh, so, like they wake up at 5 and run around?
Yeah, they'll dictate your schedule and what you study and where you go after. You get commissioned to a post after you graduate from college.
So I don't want to say that the South Korean system is similar because you don't get out of it if you go to university. But it is sort of meritocratic in the same way because I was lucky enough to get a master's before doing the military. We as in people who have a master's can apply to a program where instead of serving in the barracks for that 18 to 25 months we were talking about previously, you can apply for a research sort of position as a civilian, which is what I did. So,
but was that only possible because you did pre-med? Or
no, so anyone with a master's in the STEM fields
is
they can apply to the program. It doesn't guarantee you a seat, and that program has been quite contentious because it used to be 5 years, it was 3, then 5 and 3.
5 is intense.
And some people see it as a meritocratic sort of privileged gain, and some people see it as a necessary advancement for the Korean army. But being a researcher for the military isn't as cool as it sounds.
Yeah.
They basically pair you up with a university or a startup, and they just make you work there for 3 years.
I heard Katusa is a bomb deal.
I mean, again, I can't say because I haven't been there, but mm-hmm. yeah, I mean, once you go there, I think a lot of people enjoy their time.
Yeah, because you just get hooked up with the American military right, and you just right. hang out with them and follow their schedule. Right. And
but, you know, what I found very striking and what was really shocking about my time in the military, which for the 36 months, I spent only 1 month of that period being in the barracks.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone, regardless of what program or whatever you're doing, you have to go to this thing called 훈련소, which is
basic training.
Basic training. Yeah, it's like boot camp. And it's probably, or it is because I was in this other program that we were given sort of the lesser equipment.
Okay, yeah.
But regardless, it was atrocious.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Like, I honestly believe that if there is a war,
we're screwed.
Yeah, the Korean military is not ready for anything serious.
Mm.
So I think it really boils down to three things. But first of all, there was a lot of very heavy men. Mm-hmm. Heavy as in fat.
Yeah.
And
not fit.
Yeah, not fit. And it wasn't because I was in the barracks with like researchers. I was mixed in with everyone else.
Yeah.
And I would see thousands and thousands of Korean men who are supposed to serve in the army.
Yeah.
But these guys are not fit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They could not run for their life. Honestly, if some person was coming after them, they couldn't run away.
Wait,
because
but, sorry to cut you off,
no,
but
no,
like there are some, a lot of people that go into the military kind of like overweight, mm-hmm. but a lot of them lose weight. So is that...
So the thing they say is if you come in fat, you go out skinny. And if you come in skinny, you go out fat.
Oh, what?
I don't know how true that is, but
okay.
I was just shocked by how unfit yeah. the average, or from what my experience, the average fitness level of the recruits were. So that was really mm-hmm. alarming. The second thing was, and this is probably specific to my program, but we were given equipment like guns, our gear, mm-hmm. our belts, our weaponry, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It was from the Vietnam War.
Like the actual yeah. Vietnam War.
The 70s.
So this is many, many, many years after that.
That's like 50 years ago.
Yeah. We're That's approaching crazy. That. Yeah. And I'm not sure if, one, the equipment is relevant anymore.
Yeah.
And two, how are you supposed to learn to be a soldier when nothing works?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
See, that's crazy to me. Like, why wouldn't they update that?
Because there's this thing
like
called
recycling.
방산비리.
Oh, wait, what's that?
Which basically means where's all the money that is going?
Oh, right.
Yeah, our defense
the
budget.
The age-old question.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying that's what it is, but mm-hmm. one has to wonder, why am I using guns from the Vietnam War?
Yeah.
That's the insane. Normal Korean soldiers get the K2s, which is, I think, the Korean-made.
Mm-hmm. Made by Daewoo. Yeah. Actually, right. I'm kind of a gun fanatic, even though I've never fired one, and the K2s
You've
are...
never fired one?
Yeah, well, I'm a Canadian, unlike... You Yankees.
I'm not even a Yankee, but yeah, damn. I mean, like, got that Paki side.
Anyways, the K2, the homegrown Daewoo K2 rifles are very capable weapons.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. Just one.
So it's, I guess, relieving to know that everyone else gets a functioning weapon. But
yeah.
just because we are that special cadre of people who
yeah.
probably won't be on the front lines.
Oh, so they gave you
yeah.
guys all like the
yeah.
shit.
They're like, here's a toy gun and like your Fisher Price set. Go play.
Fisher Price.
Go play over there.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that was why my experience of it was so negative, but the rigor of training, the sort of experience of whatever they're trying to instill
mm-hmm.
in you, it all seemed kind of like a joke.
Mm-hmm.
And I could not see these people being in a real war situation.
Yeah.
So I am more or less concerned about the prospects of a war.
And going off of that, when I look at some of the young guys, I do not think they're ready for war. Mm-hmm. And so why do you have a long military serving period?
Mm-hmm.
Because you need to break them. Like you need
yeah,
to
yeah.
make them mentally prepared for war. You
right.
need to make them mentally prepared to be able to follow orders in a battle situation. And so, yes, conscription sucks. Yes, it's a huge waste of time. But, you know, like you mentioned about the geopolitics of Korea, when you do need to defend a country
mm-hmm.
and you do need soldiers, I do think that time, like you can't, there's no replacement for time.
Right.
Like you can't brainwash a soldier in 6 months
right.
the way you can in a year and a half or 2 years.
Right.
And so there's really no way around that, the time factor.
You need to break their spirits.
Yeah. Because,
oh,
like, in terms of, like, training, like, if you spend 2 years in the military, you're not learning like new skills for those 2 years. Like the skills that you actually need to function in a military situation.
You're saying it's just taking orders.
Yeah, you can probably do it in like a month or two. Mm-hmm. Like you can get all that training in a month or two. But the reason why it's 2 years is, like you said, you got to break the spirit.
Yeah, and...
Damn, that's bleak.
I was only there for a month, but my spirit was starting to break. Mm. It's pretty bleak in there.
I can only imagine. Fun fact, until I was eight, I think my mom accidentally registered me as a dude. So she figured that out when I was eight because it was like something to do with, I don't know what letter she got, but it was like, it said that I was a boy and like eventually I would go to the military. And my mom was like, holy shit, I fucked up so bad.
Well, that's hilarious.
So, I mean, I could have been there at basic training.
Well, I'm going to tell you, you're not missing out on anything.
Yeah, thank God she fixed that. Well, can you imagine like
you
getting the letter?
In a barracks surrounded by
people. Oh,
dudes,
yeah, fuck no.
Maybe you might. No, you'd like that.
No, I mean, no.
What if they were super hot?
No, well, I just heard what Mike said, and, you know, no thanks.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. They're probably not.
If there was a scale of 0 to 10, uh-huh. 10 being like, wow, I really enjoyed that, this would have been like a 0.
A 0?
A 0. Yeah. Okay. I had 0 fun.
Yeah, 0.
Nothing sucks, about it was man. Fun.
Wait, so what did you research?
What do you mean?
During your program, like instead of doing the military.
Yes. Okay, so I applied. Okay, so as soon as I got back from London, mm-hmm. I was under the impression that they were just going to come get me.
Oh.
Like ASAP. It's like, oh, you're in our country's borders now. You are ours to take.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like that. Apparently, I had like 6 months to apply and do whatever.
So they're like intense, but also chill. Right.
But I didn't know that. I found that out after the fact. But I was under the impression that they were going to come get me. So I...
Like extradite you.
Yeah. To the barracks.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I thought I had very little time. So I applied to the program that I ended up getting into, mm-hmm. about 30 of them. And the first one that I got, I just went.
Uh-huh.
I was like, hey, I'm okay. I'm doing this program. Yeah. Leave me alone. I'm safe. I'm not going anywhere. So I got placed into this place called, I'm not sure if it would matter if I talk about the place. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, let's just call it X Lab. Okay. Yeah.
Ooh,
I
that
don't
sounds awesome.
Have a lot
it probably
of,
sounds way cooler.
Yeah.
Than it
I
is.
Don't have too many positive things to say about where I was working.
Uh-huh. X Lab.
But it was a startup that started at SNU.
Uh-huh.
And it spun out and became a company. So I started working at SNU and then I gradually moved out with the company.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do is they're very interested in the bacteria of your intestines.
That creates mm-hmm. Wolverine.
Well, maybe.
Nice.
I think our CEO would like to believe that. But the rest of the scientific community, although it is like a buzzword, this, uh-huh. it's called the microbiome.
Yeah,
oh, right.
Right. It's in every yogurt cup.
Right.
Everyone's obsessed with it.
Which describes, I guess, the second DNA exploration of our time. So first we had normal DNA, which mm-hmm. codes for who we are.
Yeah.
But the second DNA, or the microbiome, refers to the bacteria that live on us.
Yeah.
Whether it's on your face, your fingers, or your intestines.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you think about how you get to study this, there is one thing that we do at least once a day. Maybe not at least.
Maybe
but,
not.
Yeah. But it's something that we all share as humans.
Right.
And it's simply that we test your shit.
Yes.
Nice.
To see what's in it.
Yes. I
X-Lab.
I was fully aware of X-Lab. What he researched. I just really wanted him to say that he researched shit.
And, I mean, you know.
So did you, like, face-to-face, like, deal with shit? Like, you handled
so,
shit?
I guess this is fortunate of me,
yeah.
my good luck. But I was not placed in the actual science part lab.
Uh-huh.
I mm-hmm. was doing more of the... data processing, which is weird because I know nothing about computers.
Okay.
Or I didn't then. And I didn't get to experience the shit that they had mailed to us.
You know? Like, so at X-Lab, was it like cooler to be a data processor? Or like,
yeah,
did
for
you
sure.
Have,
like,
oh, okay.
Yeah, man, I get there's, to deal with
like,
shit.
You're
yeah.
missing out, bro. Like,
I mean,
was...
honestly, there is one person's job to receive many people shit in a box.
Oh, God.
And they
that's
have
a
to,
shitty job.
Yeah.
Like, shit in a box.
There's no other way to put it. Yeah. It's a shitty job.
Yeah.
And it was
Do you
a
like
she.
Eat lunch with that guy? Like
No, it was a girl.
It was a girl.
And I think she quit.
Oh no.
But can you blame her?
I cannot. No, yeah. That's
She must see some
Yeah.
stuff.
I mean
Yeah. Ugh.
Anyway, she
were,
had
Were you
to,
friends with her?
No, I mean
Was she young?
She was younger than me for sure.
Oh,
but,
damn. Poor little girl.
Yeah, I just can't imagine having to go through. It's like Christmas, but with shit. You're like opening boxes and there's shit after shit after shit.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of people's shit.
Yeah.
And it must come in like different varieties, you know? Like,
yeah.
There's some like
oh
funky
God.
Color
oh
shit.
Oh my God.
You know? Imagine
yeah.
like you never know what you're going to get.
And, like undigested food matters.
Oh,
she probably
shoot.
Has like trauma. Possibly.
Yeah. She probably can't even look into the toilet bowl
Was
after.
She, like, stigmatized at work, though, because she deals with shit?
No, unfortunately, or not unfortunately. Fortunately, I don't think she was.
Okay.
But she did quit because maybe she found that her work wasn't meaningful.
It broke her spirit, just like yeah. the military.
Well, aren't we all equal then?
That is crazy.
But I guess if I want to say anything about my experience there, it wasn't too different from the military. I think because so many Korean men, or really all of them, go through it, mm-hmm. you can't escape this hierarchy of mm. the sort of militarist imposed system of society.
Yeah.
A lot of the, yeah. I mean, we have this expression in Korean called 삽질, mm-hmm. yeah. which is you do these tasks that, for really no reason yeah. except that someone made you do it.
Yeah.
And when you tell them, hey, I'm not sure if this is a good idea, or hey, here's a better idea, they don't really care.
Yeah. They're like, but yeah. that's not what I told you to
yeah.
do.
They're more interested in how you can spend your time that, you know, pertains more to their entertainment mm-hmm. or whatever they
whatever
view as
is.
Important.
And also, this is the same in North Korea where there's really nothing to do in North Korea that productively mm-hmm. because there's not a lot of resources for you to do anything productive.
Right.
But the number one rule, and especially in these tight communist socialist states, the biggest danger to society is doing nothing.
Right.
So mm-hmm. you have these guys in the military, you have these guys in university that are made to do absolutely useless tasks because you are not allowed to do nothing. Mm-hmm. So what they would do, for instance, is they would, a group of 30 people would go to a grass field and mow the lawn with scissors.
That's
like 30 guys.
Fucking crazy.
Like it's not even necessary.
Right.
But
right.
they just all day cutting the grass with scissors. And then they would like.
Are they like tiny scissors?
Yeah,
like
scissors that you. No, scissors that you use to cut paper. And then another time they would like construct like a playground. And then as soon as it's done, they disassemble it.
So.
Wow.
Yeah. I can't say that all my tasks were that futile. But
yeah.
some of them, I really was sort of taken back by the way things would operate. And from talking about it with my Korean or international peers, they had kind of resonated with the same ideas, but apparently I worked at a place that was fairly open-minded. So,
oh, that's good.
If my experience there of this was them being open-minded, I can't imagine how sort of dire.
It can probably get much worse.
Yeah. So
oh, yeah.
I guess in that way I got a little lucky. But, what I want to say about the microbiome is the science out there is still very young.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the literature describes our at least intestinal microbiome is that just because it's on a yogurt label doesn't mean you're going to get healthier.
Yeah.
One, we don't know. Okay, we know maybe about, I believe, 1-3% of all the bacteria that's out in the world.
Mm.
So
wow.
that's a tiny fraction. And we don't know how much of our intestinal flora is a reflection of that. So
mm-hmm.
we don't know what's inside. And not everything that you poop out is a reflection of what's inside you.
Right.
So there's that issue. And there's really not great evidence yet that links certain bacteria to certain diseases.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see a lot of sensationalist articles saying we found the
yeah.
bacteria responsible for autism or
definitely
whatever.
Definitely seen a lot of those
right.
on the front page of Reddit.
Right. Or like depression
we
is.
We all know
like,
that vaccines cause
right.
autism. All right, guys. Let's
it's
get
the vaccines.
Yeah.
But anyway, they'll post things like, oh, we found that your intestinal flora is related to your depression or
mm-hmm.
mental diseases or whatever. But it's still at such an infant stage
mm-hmm.
that I think a lot of companies or organizations are just trying to monetize this. And the thing I'd say about probiotics or, bacterial-laced foods is that eating it won't go straight to your stomach, mm-hmm. or your intestines, rather. Your stomach is acidic for a reason, and it's to kill bacteria and germs. So even if you eat one of those like crazy yogurt things nutrition with like 1 billion, you know, bacteria in it, a very small fraction of that is going to maybe make it to your intestines.
Mm. Wait, so are you saying it's still better to have the ones with the crazy amounts of...
I mean, I don't know. I feel like with most foods, the way that I subscribe to going about these things is to just eat a lot of naturally created foods in a moderate way.
In moderation.
It just seems to work.
Yeah.
Don't stuff yourself with like some super laced yogurt with tons of stuff that some lab probably
injected
in there.
And then only eat that.
Right. And only eat that. You're going to have bad diarrhea for a long time. Anyway, we should probably move away
from shit.
We talked about shit for a while.
No, it was interesting. Yeah, I mean, you learn something new every day, right?
Yeah.
So then, Mike, can you tell us a little bit about what you're currently doing?
Yeah. So, So I finished the program, the military thing, about... it's been almost 3 weeks now, and it's still very fresh.
The smell.
Okay, stop.
X-Lab.
Moving away from that. Okay.
X-Lab. But yeah, I've been involved in this project called Textures, and it is a network of artists that have gathered to sort of promote and discuss the underground techno and house culture of Korea.
Whoa.
Mostly
that's so cool.
Cool.
Yeah, so it consists of 8 members, and we're...
So you're a DJ, or is everybody a DJ? Or?
So everyone there is a... Well, yeah, except for one person, everyone is a DJ.
Wow.
And everyone is also a producer.
That is fucking cool.
Which
that
I is think cool. is a harder feat to...
It kind of reminds me of like those intellectual cafes that like socialists and communists had.
Saloons.
Saloons, exactly.
Yes.
Is that kind of the deal?
So I don't know if we... A saloon would be, I guess, a perfect network of artists. But unfortunately, or maybe not unfortunately, but we decided to go with a sort of a tighter network. So we usually operate everything together. But it doesn't mean that we are only exclusive within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
We collaborate with a lot of artists. So we collaborated a bunch of merchandise with this clothing store called The International.
Cool.
That sounds very
communist.
Oh, I saw them. Right. Oh, my God. Honestly, the merch they put out with that collab looked so good.
Right. They did a terrific job. And
where can we get them?
Let's
plug this in right now.
I mean, I believe it's all sold out.
Damn.
But if you go to theinternational.com or just search for The International with 3 eyes.
Yeah, it wasn't a .com domain, I think. I remember I looked for it.
I don't know.
We'll
the
have
domain.
A link somewhere on the website.
But, I mean, they make great merch and they're great fans and supporters of that underground scene. So they've been really terrific and collaborating with them has been just wonderful. And beyond that, the Textures organization is we run all our media through social media. If you go to our Instagram or YouTube or Facebook,
Textures Soul.
So on Instagram is textures.soul.
Nice.
On YouTube it's I think the same thing. I think it's uniform throughout, but we pair locally created music, so by Korean producers, and not just us, whoever's around, we select or get music submissions, and we pair that with scenes of soul.
Yeah.
So whether it's like night driving or whether it's drone footage.
So this could be photography, it could be video.
Yeah, so we've incorporated both actually with local photographers. Steve Rowe, shout out, he's helped us out.
Steve Rowe.
He's famous for doing these like neon punk, cyberpunk.
Yo, I've seen some of those photos.
Yeah.
The one like outside a cake shop.
Yes.
I love that photo.
So
it's like modern Renaissance art.
Yeah. He's quite famous for that aesthetic.
That's a pretty awesome aesthetic.
Yeah, that was a really fun collaboration. And we had, I can't remember his name. Something Heights, but dude was just filming drone footage of Seoul. And we were like, hey dude, you're awesome, let's
hey,
make
dude.
Some stuff together. And it's just a very loose group of people who pitch ideas to our team, both internally and externally, and if we like the idea, we just go ahead and make something.
So your media platform mm-hmm. is social media. Is there anything in print that you guys do? Or
Some local magazines have written about our media or compilations or music, mm-hmm. but you know, we're trying to stick with the
very
time.
Digital.
Yeah. Digital is the most cost effective.
Definitely.
And for a startup like us who, you know, we're not rolling in cash. Mm-hmm. So we have to think about how can we make this economic.
Nice.
And yeah.
So obviously what you're doing is so cool, but I am curious as like, did you guys decide to come together and do this because you saw a need in the underground music scene? Or
that's
like
a good question.
Yeah, terrific point. So we were all DJs at one point, and we still are, but we find that DJs, because there's so many of us, mm-hmm. I mean, there's kind of a running joke, but it's like, if I had a heart attack right here and the EMT came, he could be a DJ. There's just so many DJs.
Yeah,
it's not as bad as it is in like Berlin or something. Oh, we're like literally everyone's
a DJ.
Like, oh, you're a DJ? I'm a DJ. We're all DJs. Anyway, because there's so many of us, the clubs sort of feel like that we are more or less replaceable.
Uh-huh. Mm.
So we were kind of miffed by that.
Yeah.
We're like, hey, part of the deal is that you grow us as artists and we will give you the best of our abilities to play our sounds at your venues. And like, while that is a really, you know, it's an honor to be responsible for a night or a section of the night by playing your songs and your tracks. You know, we do respect that time. But for some reason, just by the nature of economics, if you have a lot of supply and not enough venues to play these things out, you're going to get marginalized.
Definitely.
So one of the things that started Textures was for that need to like fill the gap of, you know, if clubs aren't going to represent our music, maybe we should just make our own online and create like an online venue sort of thing. Mm-hmm. But another reason I think this was more salient really was the clubs weren't really putting out a lot of their own content.
Yeah.
Oh.
So if you see clubs in, let's say, London, for example, Fabric is a big one. Fabric has a series, a mix series, mm-hmm. that they put out on their own. And besides that mix series, they have a lot of other things they're doing.
In-house,
that would put the club on the digital map.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, hey, we're a club and offline. We have all these terrific events that you could attend. But if you are, for some reason, not able to, we have all this stuff for you online for you to also enjoy. And it just seemed timely with sort of the rise of online radio and online mix sets and parties like Boiler Room or whatnot. We just thought that it would be a good idea to sort of create that sense of community and content for the local scene.
Yeah, and also you have to have kind of like an authority, right? Like
a DJ,
because... Mm-hmm. Not everyone is like a super good DJ. Not everyone can recognize what really talented DJing is.
Right.
And it's just like, you know, because of technology these days, anyone can make a mixtape.
Right.
So I guess you guys can also be kind of like that authority that says, hey, this is up and coming. This is good.
Well, you know, it's difficult for us to say because DJing or art really is a subjective experience. So we could say, hey, this is terrific, you should check it out.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of people could disagree with us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think the authority point, you need to know to some degree that what we're putting out is of a certain quality because, you know, we could just spam.
Yeah.
We could just be like, hey, we're going to post every day about everything about, we could have no filtered content. But everything that we do put out, it is thought out, and we do our own quality control. Now, whether that can be a sort of authority on the scene, that's not really for me to say.
But I feel like you guys are also kind of really, you guys don't really set boundaries on what
We're just saying, hey, this is Seoul. This is what's going on in our city. And as someone who's had both international and local experience, we want to share what's going on here with the rest of the world. We don't want to say that this is better or worse. Mm-hmm. This is just what's going on from our view.
Mm-hmm.
So if you like it.
Well, I think that's a very humble explanation. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, you're a bunch of guys with really, really...
And girls.
Girls. With really, really good taste. Like, I'm not saying it's the taste, that it's the best taste, or that it should be the taste that becomes authority. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, you guys do consider yourselves as people that like things of a certain caliber, of a certain quality, and you guys would like to promote the industry so that it reaches an even higher quality and that it maintains that quality.
Right. So, you know, to go off that point, what sort of disappointed me in the beginning was this Western fetishism.
Ooh, that's a cool word.
I mean, so for example, a lot of local DJs are fantastic. They're just so, so good. And I'm blown away every day by how good they are. But when you have these local DJs who carry the scene play, people don't really care.
Yeah.
But you get one foreign DJ.
One guy from Denmark.
My God.
Right. Like, you know, European, whatever, Berlin, Paris, London. Whenever they come here, people lose their mind.
Yeah, just the name.
Yeah, I've seen that too. And honestly, I like you said, local DJs have their... Lots of DJs that have similar vibes, similar sounds, and honestly, like, sometimes even better.
Right.
For sure. But then it's like the clubs are empty, and it just makes me sad. And I'm not even in the community.
Right. And, you know, I'm not... This isn't to throw shade on the international artists.
I think,
you know, they've earned that.
Of course.
They've earned that, and they've worked very hard to get to where they are. But it's just... part of the thing that we're doing with Textures is to show the locals, hey, those people are good. But our stuff is pretty cool too.
Yeah.
And what we're seeing from the international community is that they're able to see what we're doing and they have a very positive reaction to this. Mm. And Asia is sort of, I mean, in my view, coming up as a cultural hub.
Oh, I think it already is.
Yeah.
In terms of culture, I think that baton is being passed from Europe to and the States to Asia, if not already.
No, for sure.
And like, you know, Hallyu is a relevant example. While I don't agree with all of the values that are promoted in K-pop, as far as music goes, Korea is on the map.
Yes.
And what we're trying to do is to show the world, hey, it's not just about K-pop. We have a lot of cool things going on here, whether it's underground techno or house or band culture.
And the reason why Hallyu, like, music videos can be so, like, interesting is, like, these guys, the artists that are making the Hallyu music videos, like, a lot of them do have their underground roots. A lot of them have the underground influences. And yes, it's turned into, like, a mainstream factory K-pop scene. But the fact is, those interesting K-pop Hallyu music videos wouldn't be possible if Korea didn't have the creative underground resources for them to draw from.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So, it's many things, but... Basically, what we're trying to do is put Korea as an underground sort of destination to say we have a lot of things to offer. And
we really do. I mean, this city's popping.
And if language issues are the problem in getting this out, you know, people like me or you or everyone involved in this podcast, it could help sort of carry that culture outward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of people say that... Korean hip-hop for a very long time has been a very high caliber, like even like 20 or 30 years ago, Korean hip-hop
like
has been high caliber.
First generation hip-hop
artists. And the reason why is because the hip-hop kind of, I don't know, lifestyle mantra is actually very at home in Korea. And another thing that I think is very at home is the underground art scene in Korea. Like the underground art scene isn't something that Koreans looked at the West and be like, oh, like that's
let's
cool, let's create
that.
An underground art. Like Korea has been underground authentically, and the art scene has been underground authentically.
Right.
And so it's really good.
I mean, you know, Hongdae 20 years ago was that.
Exactly.
It was the home of the underground. It's a different place now, but gentrification and that, all that.
But
is
that spirit, the underground artistic spirit, I think, in Korea is very strong.
Right. And
that's true. When you think about that, a lot of times you do just think of Hongdae as that.
It's kind of sad what it's becoming or has become, but, you know, I think renewal of cities and towns is just sort of an inevitable process of making a new underground pocket somewhere else. And so,
I think about like Greenwich Village in New York or Brooklyn, you know.
Right.
Now it's you know, super bougie.
We kind of had a similar topic in another episode we talked about like gay neighborhoods in Korea, because those same neighborhoods are also being gentrified. Right, so right. Even the gay community, they have to like seek right. out other spots. That's
I mean,
like,
I wasn't aware, but Jongno apparently was like the OG gay spot.
Yo, yes.
I had no idea.
You should listen to that ep. But like, yeah that's super interesting too.
And Jongno is becoming super hip these right, days.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
But you can see how the gay community has sort of migrated to Itaewon.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll see where they go next.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's a city going through constant evolutions. And
it's very exciting. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely more exciting than, say, like Canada, where like I can leave for 10 years, I come back and like
it's
nothing's
like the same
changed.
Thing.
Right.
But in Korea, yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. I mean, I've never been to Canada, but...
Yeah. I mean, if anything, I guess we can sort of wrap it up on this positive mm-hmm. note, but mm-hmm. when I had to first return to Korea from London, I wasn't really not looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. My time here has been fairly short, and I had fairly negative views about coming here as a internationally tinged person.
I felt the same way, so yeah. I kind of yeah. know exactly where you're
but,
coming from.
You know, there's so many opportunities here and lots of great people yeah. and lots of great culture, and it is possible for you to be proactive in the community to sort mm. of act as the bridge between the world and what's going on in Korea. So my
well, that's inspirational.
Yeah,
that's I just got goosebumps.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
same.
The prospects of staying here has become a lot more positive for me, and I want to continue the work.
Yeah, and like you see so many things that you're not satisfied with, but at the right. same time you can also see the pace of things changing
right.
and so you're like yeah
fast.
This sucks but
right.
like things are changing so
that's
fast.
That's exactly how I feel, because I mean like you, I had so many apprehensions about moving back here
right.
and like you, I have a Korean passport mm-hmm. and I was just like, it's so unfair that I just couldn't yeah. get a visa in the States
right.
or like, you know. And I mean, my home like base is Hong Kong and I grew up there.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first came to Korea, like when I couldn't get the visa in the States, and actually fun fact, I have a visa rejection tattoo. So people are like, ooh, what does this mean? I'm like, it's just a random pattern, but really it's the day I found out my visa application was rejected.
Ooh, that's a cool tattoo.
And I was so upset mm-hmm. because they didn't even say, oh, you have like, they were like, you're officially illegal now. I'm like, I don't even get like 2 weeks to
mm-hmm. yeah.
settle all my
yeah.
stuff, and they're like, no,
get out now.
So you need to get out.
Where,
like,
wait,
soon.
Is this Hong Kong or the States?
The States. I mean, I'm a, what do you call it, permanent resident in Hong Kong, so they're not going to do that to mm-hmm. me. But anyways, point is, I was really not willing to come here, and then I told my parents, I'm like, I'm going to be in Korea just for a year, and mm-hmm. I'm like going to come back to Hong Kong.
Right.
And you know what, this is like, I'm going on 3 years. I fucking
yeah.
love it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going on like 6, 7, so
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, lots of opportunities, lots of exciting things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike, thanks so much for coming. This
yeah,
was great.
No problem,
we definitely man. Are going to have you back.
For sure.
For more stuff.
I had a great time.
Lots yeah. to talk yeah, about.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you.